From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th of May, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike joined us for our Commodity Week discussion as well, along with Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com. If you can stay with us for the whole hour on our home station, you'll hear all of that program. If not, it will air on many of these radio stations over the weekend, and it's up online right now at WILLAG.org. Today, we'll also talk about power, politics, and pushback, how residents have been sounding off on data centers. It's the third in a series of reports you've heard this week on the Closing Market Report, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn settled at $4.71 and a quarter, 3¾ higher. December at $4.93 and a half, up 4. July beans, $12.08, 15¾ higher. And November up 16 cents at $11.89 and a half cents a bushel. July soft red winter wheat at $6.19, up 6¾. And the hard red July at $6.75¾, 8½ higher. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Hi, Mike. Thanks much for being with us and for doing Commodity Week yesterday. Really good program. People need to stick around and listen to that. I do have some questions for the day because soybeans are up fairly sharply for the day. I want to know about what's behind that move, and then there's some follow-ups.
Yeah, two big things. I think the one was the return of the energy markets and the dashed expectations heading into the weekend that Iran and the United States was going to get anything done concretely before Friday's close in terms of elongating and continuing on with their peace process. And that in turn soothing the higher likelihood of the Trump-Xi meeting next Thursday and Friday in China. The trade did not get what they wanted with the energies, gave bean oil the ability to go higher, I think, Todd, but also just as importantly, the trade is baking into prices. This summit not only happening, but from both traders in Chicago, news sources in Asia, a lot of talk about China giving what one news service called trophies to the United States, aircraft orders and soybean orders. And so I do think there is an element of soybean premium being pushed in on Friday's trade from those two areas, especially.
Okay, so the thing I want to talk a little bit about with soybeans, and I'm not sure it's quite there, is that aviation fuel is in short supply across the United States. Refiners here have really pushed trying to get aviation fuel, more of it through the refineries. Kerosene normally is what we think of aviation fuel. It can be made from soybean oil. It can also be made aviation fuel from corn oil or ethanol, I mean.
Yeah.
And so they're two different products in two different ways. And I'm wondering whether the renewable volume obligations for renewable diesel and the push that the refineries, the oil industry has had to meet aviation fuel needs here in the United States and in Europe, both because it's being exported, will push soybeans oil, or, and that's part of the reason, and probably not today, but could be part of the reason that oil or soybeans could take off even through this process. I'm just trying to understand what the market looks like.
Yeah, this is a tough one. And in the limited time we have, I'll say I think you're definitely on the right track from the analysis I've done. The two biggest things to watch right now is, given that we are still hitting $3 a bushel and hitting what I see as records and crush in terms of profitability, I think you're definitely on the right track in the short term that is going to continue to help soybeans more than corn. What I am picking up, though, is that distillates and jet fuel in particular globally is being rationed at a much higher rate than anything else out there at this stage. And so we don't know how bad the demand destruction is going to be when this is all over. And I'll just give you a quick number. Diesel outflows from Asia, exports going out of Asia in the month of April hit a record low, 3.9 million tons. That was down 42% from the prior month. And that's so we're literally shutting down diesel exports, ramping up biofuel domestic capacity in Asia, especially because that's where they're hardest hit. I see this as a situation where we could go a little bit longer, but I also see that Argentina bean oil prices are at 10-year lows right now. And so there's a huge arbitrage that needs to be done. It's kind of like European natural gas and US natural gas. It's kind of like wheat and crude oil. There's a lag here that includes what kind of demand destruction we're under. But I would say sustainable aviation fuel has got its day in the sun, but we're probably killing a lot of demand right now.
Yeah, so we have to watch it and act quicker, sooner rather than later, at some point, I suppose.
I think so. And like 2011 with the Arab Spring, we will get into that food versus fuel debate, and I bet bean oil will be right in the center of it. Whereas with ethanol, corn and sugar are split up enough worldwide. I don't think we'll get into that big of a debate.
Okay, what else have we been watching this week?
It was a week of expectations. The market expected the wheat to get rain in the hard red wheat belt. They expected the soybean rally to go higher because of the China summit we talked about. They expected the crude sell-off. I think we're going to have to come back and readdress all three of these issues. As I close this week out, I'm going to say to clients this weekend, I see crude oil and wheat supplies dropping faster than demand. And that's kind of the heart and soul of the Commodity Week program this week.
Indeed. We'll listen to that in just a bit. About 30 seconds left. Anything on Tuesday's USDA reports on WASDE?
Yeah, I'm looking for a wash from corn and beans because I think USDA will take a pass on the acreage base for corn and beans because they're readdressing that at the end of June. I don't know how they can move the export numbers much with this summit coming up. I think it's really up to the wheat. The wheat market could see lower acres and lower yield based upon crop conditions, weather patterns, and also what USDA gave us on the March acreage report. So is the wheat still the leader to the upside? I think so. I hope USDA agrees.
Indeed, we'll talk with you again next Friday, and we'll talk about those reports and whether a summit took place or not. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulow. He's at globalcommresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. This week, we've been talking about data centers quite a bit. Tuesday, we had a discussion with a representative from Google about data centers and how they view their impact on the local economy and the environment. And then on Wednesday, we heard from an ag policy expert at the University of Illinois and the College of ACES, Jonathan Kappas, about how he thinks county boards really aren't very well equipped or even the right place to manage siting of data centers, or at least the land use sides of it. And today we'll hear from Logan County, Illinois, where a proposed 500 megawatt hyperscale data center has sparked a lot of contentious debate between economic development and community preservation. Now, Florida-based company Hut 8 is looking to build a facility there in Latham. It's a project the county board's still considering for its potential to generate significant tax revenue, and local residents are concerned over the massive electrical power consumption, environmental impacts, and what they say is the lack of long-term testing. I sat down with Lincoln resident Allison Isley on the steps of the Logan County Courthouse after a protest there. We took some time to discuss why it is she's pushing back against the development.
My name is Allison Isley. I'm a Lincoln resident, and I'm stay-at-home mom. And currently, I'm here because I want to see, I want to make a difference in my community, and I want my kids not to grow up with the effects of something that frankly is untested in the long term.
So you're here because Logan County is in the midst of trying to figure out whether outside of Latham, Illinois, they would like to put a data center that's been offered by Hut 8. It's a company out of Florida. Data centers are big, clearly. They can, by their own purport, produce a lot of tax income. Why is it that you oppose it for Logan County, which I think by your own numbers, were you the one that dropped the 11,000?
Yes.
Yes. By your own 11,000 homes in Logan County, this place will use, which not surprising. Logan County is a very rural county. Mm-hmm. This place will use what?
500 megawatt facility. It's going to be the equivalent of 360,000 homes. We currently have 11,000 homes in Logan County.
So, what is it about this potential economic power that really bothers you?
Data centers, as we've known them for over a decade, have been much smaller affairs. They're limited to one building, even a room somewhere, producing and requiring a negligible amount of power, nothing that has drawn the attention of anybody. What they're talking about is a hyperscale data center. These are new. These types of data centers have only really been appearing in the last 2 years. So we're talking about a extremely large project that requires a absolutely just kind of mind-boggling amount of power, with no full guarantee that it's even going to actually be able to withstand the test of time, provide that money. The communities, as I talked about with the groups, communities that get these data centers are seeing power increases, according to the University of Michigan, of between 20 to 40%. I came here because what I could get for my cost of living here is amazing. I have a wonderful life for my family that I can afford much more here than I could in, say, the city. And so to see something want to come in and take that away from us is just incredibly disappointing.
If the crux of the matter is, I moved to Logan County because I like the slower pace of life, lower cost of living. However, the county board is elected to manage the finances of the county. Those two are at an interesting odds to one another because they're doing kind of what they were elected to do, maybe, depending on what the population, but when they're elected, generally speaking, this is what they were elected to do, find a way to grow Logan County.
Yes, and that is a fair point. And I know one of the arguments I've read was that they're going to build it somewhere, your power is going to go up anyway, it might as well be here. And I understand that. But I also see, a piece of Logan County. The people of Latham are, I feel like it's a shame because they're the most affected. It's like right outside of town for them. And it's going to be both an eyesore. And I mean, I didn't even get into in my speech the noise complaints that come out of these things. The generators they're running are like the size of semi trucks. And there's upwards of, some of them have as many as 20. So to me, I keep seeing, they're walking in, they're selling weird numbers. There's environmental concerns and noise complaint concerns and quality of life concerns, and the AI bubble is a concern. And for the equivalent of a Walmart's worth of employees, doesn't feel like a wise investment. And then they act like we want to welcome this so that we can be a center for something like this, so that people want to come here. But we go back to Virginia has a huge influx of that, and they saw their power bills go up. At what point is that worth it? Nobody can afford to live there. Great. It doesn't matter if you work there. We'll all have to live somewhere else. It's just a very frustrating thing to see. And the problem also, because it's happened so fast, nobody totally knows what are the long-term implications of any of this. They keep talking about this closed-loop system, but anytime I've tried to look into it, I can't find any that, have really put it into use long-term. So then there's the concern that does it even work for a project this big? Will that system work out, or will they start, and then they're going to have to swap over to using our water table? Will it leak all over the place? No one can answer all the questions, and if we can't answer the questions that could have long-term lifetime implications, why are we rushing into it?
No, okay.
Yeah, and which is one of the reasons.
What didn't I ask that you wanted to talk about? Anything?
Oh, gosh. You mentioned that the board is technically doing their job in terms of trying to grow the... And I think the thing that's bothered me the most has been how it's all run out. It hasn't felt like they've come around really trying to court the community, but while they do it, they've been doing it in the kind of greasiest way possible. Like I said, they opened their first meeting with, who here has a cell phone? And I was like, it's 2026. And I know we're all small town folks, and but we all got a cell phone, right? they kind of opened right off the bat with the attitude that we're all just kind of a bunch of dumb hicks that weren't going to know any better and weren't going to put up a fight and we weren't going to do our research, which really bothered me. There's a lot of wonderful, smart folks here who deserve to be listened to and deserve the time put in. But anyone who tries to like present information usually gets talked down to and kind of, and they've made a lot of like, well, you're just a Democrat and you don't agree with me because I'm a Republican. And as we saw tonight, it's not. I you know, I go to these meetings and there's a fellow with a MAGA hat in one corner and a, you know, liberal minded folk in the other corner. And I'm kind of just standing in the middle and I just want to see my county taken care of. I want my children to grow up here with, I want my kids to grow up here with clean water and good land and decisions being made for them that will benefit in the long term.
That was Lincoln and Logan County resident Allison Isley outlining her opposition to proposed hyperscale data center. This is the third in a series of interviews you've heard this week during the Closing Market Report. The first was Tuesday with Google, then Wednesday with a governmental policy expert, and then, of course, today. You may listen to all three of them on the WILL website at willag.org through Tuesday afternoon of next week. Look under the podcast tab where you will find a rolling six Closing Market Report programs. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Eric Snodgrass is now here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Eric, in our hometown and a lot of the Midwest, in fact, it's been really a pretty cool April after a very warm March. Can you tell me about the conditions we've had through that month and the beginning of May, too?
We've certainly started off the month of May quite cool, and there's been numerous frost events across crops that have already been planted. I'm thinking about Nebraska, parts of sections of Missouri, although Missouri's been very wet, but also parts of Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and then states north of that. We've seen multiple shots of colder air come through, and it's been a bit problematic to start this new month. After pounding on the, you know, with everything with heat for so long in March and April, we've now backed off. So I have good news, and that is we just need to get past this weekend and through early next week, and I think we're going to start to see a nice resurgence of warmth coming back in from the west. And it could be such that we, you know, finish the end of May on a very warm note. So we'll kind of split the month, cool to start and then warm to finish. But that's good. I mean, to put heat on this young crop is exactly what we want to see here. But yes, it's been quite chilly, and these frost events, I'm sure, have caused some problems throughout parts of the western and northern Corn Belt.
And again, we're going to dry out through that period so farmers can finish putting the crop in?
Yeah. It's, let's just say the word drier, not dry. And the reason I say that is, yes, overall, we have a slightly drier than normal outlook. But our problem, especially across parts of Illinois right now, is that we've had so much rainfall as of late that just any additional rainfall can cause delays. I was talking to Matt Bennett yesterday, and he's like, look, if you know, even if the forecast says a quarter of an inch or less, it's not going to knock me out for half a day. It's going to knock me out for 2 days because how saturated the soils are right now in certain places. And so we need to get the warmer, windier conditions back in place in order to dry things out a bit so we can finish up the planting. I'll just say this real quick. You know, the problem with going over dry, and if we do bring in heat right away, which again, it's not coming until midweek next week, but if we do, you know, we're going to put a crust on the top of this soil, which is not ideal either. And the last thing, Todd, you brought up April to start with. I ran some analysis on April's winds, and across central Illinois, we were almost 2 full standard deviations above the average on our wind speeds in April. And of course, we saw some big dust moving across the state, soil being blown really quite easily here just in the last week. So yes, we are kind of the hot spot for very windy conditions in the month of April across the entire lower 48.
Fourth year in a row in the state of Illinois that we have had dust storm warnings issued by the National Weather Service. That's kind of all no good reason to have conservation tillage going on across the state. Look forward into the summer months. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, so May is going to be critical. I want to watch how this El Nino develops and then what happens with the very warm water that's off the west coast of North America. And I also want to pay attention to the Gulf of Alaska. I mean, as you and I have talked over the years, we know that those are the key spots to watch in May and June to determine what the weather patterns are going to be. Well, the big news is just going to be about this El Nino in terms of what folks are talking about, because right now, one of our models, the ECMWF, the European model, which we talk about a lot, it's got 40% of its forecast, what we call ensemble members, predicting an historic El Nino event. In other words, stronger than we've ever observed. And we have some observations go back to the 1800s. So that model's trying to predict ocean temperatures being between 3 and 4 degrees Celsius above normal. The trouble with that, Todd, is that's unprecedented. So I can't, you know, easily reconstruct a historical analog and say, oh yeah, we should expect this. Right now, I mean, most forecasts for summer are to keep the exceptional heat much farther to the west. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think a lot of North America will likely spend summer on the cooler side of average. It does not mean we won't have heat. I'm just talking about a lack of long duration, you know, mega heat waves. I don't see it as of right now. But I'll tell you this, as much attention is going to be paid to this El Nino, by the time you and I are talking 1 month from now, we're going to have to drop that conversation and go straight to the Gulf of Alaska, because if the Gulf of Alaska ocean temperatures go cold, that's symptomatic of the jet stream wanting to drop there, and then that pops a ridge over us and we can get very hot very quickly. So Todd, it's unsettled even though we have such strong evidence in what could be a big El Nino event for this upcoming year.
Anything else for the summer here, or do we need to turn our attention to the growing crop in South America?
Yeah, let's go to South America. I imagine we're soon going to be hearing about the end of the safrinha crop not finishing as well as anticipated. I'm thinking about central and eastern growing areas in Brazil. It was dry for the last 30 days. The monsoon is done. And this is like, you know, not giving the crop a good drink past mid-August. I mean, it needs to have more moisture to finish, and they're just not getting it down there. So I'm imagining we're going to hear something about the size of that crop right about the time we get the true planted acres, well, at least what the USDA will tell us across the United States. And those two bits of information will compound right before we get the summer forecast. I think some folks are going to worry about it being hot and dry here in the summer, regardless of what the meteorologists say. So, Todd, I'm saying a month from now, when all this news kind of comes out, we could be looking at some sort of weather-inspired, you know, shock to the markets. I just don't know if it's up or down.
All right. Well, we'll check with you next week and see if you do.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, we'll check with you about the weather next week.
Yeah.
Thank you. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, and joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this 8th day of May. If you can stay with us, Commodity Week is coming up next. If not, you can find it on many of these radio stations over the weekend or up online at WILLAG.org. Right now, I'm Todd Gleason.